Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, November 10th, 2021. It's the 314th day of the year. And as always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my over 47 years of doing therapy. These tools are available gratefully, absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn the experience of any negative emotional energy into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us has been gifted. That actual tool is also available absolutely free. You can download a PDF file, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one that contain the audio of someone being stepped through that worksheet process or giving testimonial about how positively the use of the tool has impacted their lives. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it'll let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. So we encourage people to do that soon and often, put the tools to use, because that is likely to provoke comments or questions or testimonials. And if you have any of those to offer, give us a call at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and it'll put a question by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. Alternatively, you can send us an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can send Jeannie an email at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and today is the 314th day of the year, and today's lesson simply reads, I seek a future different from the past. The commentary says, from new perception of the world, there comes a future very different from the past. The future now is recognized as but an extension of the present. Past mistakes can cast no shadows on the future. so that fear has lost its idols and its images, and being formless, it has no effects. Death will not claim the future now, for life is now its goal, and all the needed means are happily provided. Who can grieve or suffer when the present has been freed, extending its security and peace into a quiet future filled with joy? Creator, we were mistaken in the past and chose to use the present, and we choose to use the present to be free. Now do we leave the future in your hands, leaving behind all past mistakes, and sure that you will keep your present promises and guide the future in their holy light. Pam Grout, in her Course in Miracles experiment book, titles Lesson 334, I Vote for Love. She quotes the Course in Miracles when it says, use the present to be free. Pam writes, Lesson 314, I seek a future different from the past, gives me an opportunity to see reality from a different angle. The past tells me, oh no, we're in trouble. But what if that's not true? What if it's only the judgments I've imposed that create a potentially scary future? If it's true that we live in an intelligent, benevolent, and connected universe, and she writes, and I have ample proof that we do, she says, I might as well relax, trust there's something a whole lot bigger going on. And when I come from a place of possibility, when there's peace in the planet of my own mind, change happens without my input. So, when I relax and trust there's something a whole lot bigger going on, I come from a place of possibility, and then there's peace in the planet of my mind, and change happens without my input. So that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and Pam Grout's commentary from Course in Miracles experiment on lesson 314. And as usual, we have about 50 minutes to talk. We have, it's interesting, I pulled up a story to share. And the story has fear as the target. And here's a lesson saying, you know, we create a fear of the future based on judgments we accumulated from the past. So the synchronicity is pretty striking. The story I wanted to share was relayed in one of the Pema Chodron books that I've been reading. And it's the story of a student warrior. And the teacher said to the student warrior, you must do battle with fear. The student did not want to, but she finally agreed. She approached fear and bowed three times and asked, may I have permission to do battle with you? Fear replied with gratitude for the respect being shown. And then the student warrior asked, how can I defeat you? And fear replied, my weapons are that I talk fast and get very close to your face. Then you get completely unnerved and do whatever I say. If you don't do what I tell you, I have no power. You can listen to me and have respect for me. You can even be convinced by me. But if you don't do what I say, I have no power. In that way, the student warrior learned how to defeat fear. And in that little story lies weeks worth of Mindshifter radio sessions where we talk about how we are the author of our emotions. My anxiety is not created by the outside events. It's not created by the people around me either doing or not doing what I want them to do or what I fear they will do. My anxiety is an energy I experience inside my mind-body energy system within the context of my energy field, my mind, my awareness, my consciousness, any word you want for it. And I create it independent of the outside events. Now, this is not what my culture teaches me. It's not what most people learn from their families, and yet it is an observable actuality. And here's a story about how the student warrior learns to defeat fear. There are several aspects of the story that I really like. There's the respecting of fear. There's the acknowledgement of fear. And there's the questioning to understand. There is this wondering about this energy that we experience. And in the questioning, in the wondering, in the examining close up, we learn that fear has no power over us unless we do what it says. And that's an essential message that we've been trying to portray, convey, get people to observe in their own lives, day in and day out, for pushing 11 years now on the Mind Shifters radio show. I am the author of my emotions. They are not created by the outside events around me. Guy Finley says, fear will never tell you what to do to be rid of fear. Fear will only tell you what to do so that it is certain that fear runs your life yet another day. And that's the message in this story. Unless I do what fear tells me, fear has no power in my life. We were in the Mind Shifter support group last night, and we were reviewing the book by Pema Chodron. We listened to the first 5 segments of that book. The book is titled When Things Fall Apart, Heart Advice for Difficult Times. And the segments are titled Intimacy with Fear. The second one is When Things Fall Apart. The third one is This Very Moment is the Perfect Teacher. The fourth one is Relax as It Is. And the fifth one is It's Never Too Late. And I believe that story came up in the 6th lesson titled Not Causing Harm. And not causing harm, and in every area of my life, is one of the primary Buddhist teachings. And it is it's a part of that story about the student warrior who was told to battle fear. And the student warrior is a Buddhist warrior and doesn't want to hurt anybody or anything. And so the idea is that I don't harm fear, I don't harm myself or others, unless I do what fear tells me to do. So, the essence of the story, the essence of the teaching, is to understand the nature, my nature, the nature of the emotions that I author, create, and experience, and the impact on my life when I allow myself to be motivated or driven by any of the negative emotions that I experience. So that was the primary offering I had today, was to open up a conversation about fear, open up a conversation about our emotions, the creation of our emotions, and how we might use the reality management worksheet to turn any negative emotional state that I experience into a productive, constructive part of the internal guidance system that every one of us has access to. The message about an internal guidance system runs deeply through Pema Chodron's work in The Course in Miracles. They refer to it as the Holy Spirit. In Pam Grout's work, she calls it the Holy S or the Dude. She has different monikers for it that she brings up, because so many people have negative connotations with God and Holy Spirit and anything that might have been co-opted by the religions of the planet. If you just think about it in terms of an inner knowing, your unconscious, your spirit guide, your higher self, your insight and intuition, creativity, name it what you will, it is always available. It is constantly sending messages and signals, and we have been conditioned by our culture to ignore, to distract from, to busy ourselves rather than stay tuned into that source of internal source of guidance. Guy Finley tells a story of World War II American reconnaissance plane that goes down in the islands, and everybody survives, but the radio's damaged so that it will only receive messages. It can't send out a signal. And so they scramble down into the valley and hide in the caves, and down there there's no good reception for the radio. And the captain knows that there's going to be a signal broadcast to tell them where to go to get picked up. There will be a rescue. He knows this. So he sends an officer long after dark, midnight, up to the top of a hill to set up the radio to listen for the signal that will give them the coordinates where they can go and just get picked up by a submarine that will come and rescue them. So he sends this private up there, and he asks them, you know, to just stay tuned to the proper frequency to hear the signals about where they need to go to get rescued, and then report in the morning. So the first night goes, and then the private comes back the next morning, and captain says, you know, what did you hear? And the private said, didn't hear anything. You know, no news about where to get picked up. Second night, same response. Third night, same response. The captain gets frustrated because he knows that there will be a rescue party coming and that the coordinates will be available through the appropriate channel on the radio. So because he's suspicious, the captain follows the private up and watches from a hiding place, and what he sees, he can't believe. Here's his private just surfing the radio dial of the shortwave radio, and he's listening to all kinds of different Russian and Spanish and, you know, French and language channels, and the captain comes out of hiding and says, what are you doing, man? I've seen your personnel file. You don't speak any of these languages. Why aren't you staying tuned to the appropriate channel waiting for the information? And the private said, but Captain, I didn't want to be here up here all by myself. I need a distraction. So instead of sitting quietly, tuned in to the true source of the information that will be the saving grace for everybody in the team, he's distracting himself. He's surfing the radio channels. He's listening to stuff that he doesn't even understand without any hope of making sense of it, simply because I don't want to be here up here all by myself. That's us in our lives. Rather than meditate, rather than stay, you know, in the presence of any upset, taking that calming breath, turning the focus inside, asking to be shown from our internal guide, rather than doing that, almost all of us have been conditioned into the process of distraction, into the what some would call the abyss, what others would call, you know, the mindless chatter. We all know in our lives which of these distractions we find most comforting. You know, music, video games, television, drugs, alcohol, Facebook scrolling, the latest social media, because now there's all of these various things that are not Facebook anymore. They're coming so fast and furiously that Facebook literally can't buy them all fast enough. So there are a few of them that sprung up, and then Facebook had to buy them so they can control them and have access to the algorithms and feed us stuff to help us want to buy more of stuff that we don't really need. That's another distraction for a lot of people, buying things they don't need. Rather than slowing down and tuning into the source of wisdom, healing, light, love, compassion, creativity, rather than doing that, most of us have been conditioned into the pattern of distraction. We don't want to be in this game all by ourselves. So we get distracted. And we stay busy. And or we use what Michael Rice would call the number one pseudo-solution of the non-being mind. We try to figure things out. We rely on our intellectual strength, and we stay stuck in the wild goose chase, the never-ending wild goose chase of trying to figure out what's happening within our mental and emotional processing. And the conscious logical mind will only, always and forever, give us things to focus on outside of ourselves and show us pictures that indicate that thing that it is showing us outside of ourselves is responsible for our pain, our fear, our sadness, our upset, our insecurity. It's never been the case, and yet our minds will constantly show us pictures trying to convince us that that is the case. Most of us are far more competent, far more able to connect with insight, intuition, creativity, and love than we know. And we don't know, and we don't figure it out because there's a discomfort we would have to overcome in order to have that experience. What's the discomfort rooted in? Breaking the habit that we've been conditioned into. We have habits of thought that we've been conditioned into, and that's all they are. And because they feel so comfortable, because they're so well practiced, we have this addiction to the familiar. And so we're going to have to be willing to experience the discomfort. Dale Ellen Hoffman, fond of talking about how he has, on a regular basis, he'll have people come to him and they will say, I really want to take my spirituality and my spiritual work to the next level. What should I do? And Dale will say, well, there are several steps. The first one is you need to go home and go into your bedroom and turn out all the lights, turn off all the distractions, no incense, no meditation pillows, no mantras, no New Age music to facilitate the meditative process. Just go into your room and be alone in the dark for a solid 2 hours. It might be three or four, but it would be tough enough for most people to do that and just have the 2 hours. And he says, to a person, everyone that's ever asked him that question and then come back to him and said, okay, you know, what's step two? What's step three? He asks them, well, did you do step one? Did you go into your bedroom with no distractions whatsoever and sit in the dark for 2 hours? And he reports that to a person, no one does it. And so then he says, well, why do you want to know what step two and step three are? Because if you haven't done step one, you can do step two and step three, and it won't produce any fruit. The ability to understand why we run from our own internal guidance is one of the primary first steps in spiritual growth. And people can go off into a cave and meditate for years, but if they're internally running from their own reasons for tapping into their internal guidance, they won't make the progress that they say they crave to make. You have within you direct access to the same spiritual truth, the same absolute truths of life that every spiritual teacher that you've ever looked up to or admired or found interesting, that every other person on the planet has access to. The blockages to that are internal. And that's what so many of these spiritual teachings are trying to get us to understand. Notice, if I feel upset about something, I don't do a worksheet on the other person. I do a worksheet on my upset. If I have anger in me and my mind is showing me a picture of how I'm only angry because Larry did this and Larry didn't do that, and I go and I talk to somebody who teaches the emotional freedom technique tapping, they don't instruct me to go tap on Larry. They instruct me to tap on my own mind-body energy system. It's a reminder, it's a nonverbal reminder when I do EFT tapping that the anger, the fear, the sadness, the hurt, the guilt, the shame, the frustration, the sense of inadequacy that I feel, it's in here because I'm tapping on my body, my face, my fingertips, my body energy points. It's a nonverbal reminder that the disruption I'm experiencing is in here. And everything that wants to distract me from that internal process is one of the primary first things I need to become aware of in order to make any progress in my spiritual growth. I was working with somebody yesterday in a session, and they were talking about how they were interacting with a 17-year-old who was coming to one of their support group meetings, and my patient was just talking about how thoroughly triggered he was getting by this 17-year-old. And we, in the work that I do in my therapy sessions, it's almost exactly the same work that I do here with people on Mindshifter Radio. And so we had to very quickly ask him to get centered and recognize that the only reason he was feeling upset is because he was still judging himself negatively for doing the same or similar things that this 17-year-old was doing. And fortunately for my patient and his own work, he's willing to look at that. He has seen it numerous times before, and he's willing to continue to look at it as a source of his upset because he's committed to actually resolving his upset. It's one of the bottom line observations that is stated this way: I will never be upset about anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should, unless I'm still somehow judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing. Just take a minute, take a breath, and let that sink in. I will never be upset about anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing. It doesn't mean I did the same or similar thing 2 minutes ago or that I've done the same thing to that person. It might mean that I'm doing that same or similar thing to myself in self-abusive patterns. It might mean that I haven't done anything like that for 30 years. But I did do something or thought or even thought about doing something like that 30 years ago, and I'm still beating myself up emotionally for having had that internal experience. Please don't believe any of this. Observe it for yourself. The next time you're upset and you go to do a worksheet or you do some EFT tapping and it doesn't get resolved quickly and easily, ask yourself to list what are the traits, what are the behaviors or traits that the person that you think you're upset about is exhibiting. How would you describe your upset? Or how would you describe what they're doing that your mind is telling you is causing your upset? Are they being impatient? Are they being rude? Are they being dishonest? Are they being disingenuous? Are they being duplicitous, two-faced? Are they betraying a confidence? Are they stealing something that doesn't belong to them? When you stumble across, as you list those traits or behaviors, and you stumble across the specific trait or aspect that is triggering to you, your emotions will resonate. You'll feel it. And all you need to do is take a breath and ask yourself, okay, when in the recent or distant past have I done this behavior or exhibited this trait that I am still judging myself negatively for? If you breathe, if you soften, if you allow, something will likely come to mind, especially if you were able to identify the thing that holds the most emotional intensity for you in the present situation of what your mind is showing you about the other person. And then all you need to do is do your EFT tapping on your negative judgment of yourself, or you need to do the Michael Rice Reality Management Worksheet on this memory you have of a time in the past, whether you were a teenager or in single digits or whether it was 5 years ago. You do the worksheet on the time that you were doing the very thing that your mind is telling you you're upset with this other person for, and you will have resolution far quicker than any worksheets you do where the other person is labeled as the trigger or the cause of your upset. It is only, always, and forever an inside job. You are the author of your emotions, just like everyone else authors their emotions. You have access within you to the internal guidance to help you resolve any negative emotional state. And when you are willing to embrace that internal system, when you're willing to step out of your comfort zone that has you distracting yourself from that internal signal, your life will start improving by leaps and bounds. So that's our extended intro for today. We have about 22 minutes left. Our call in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How is the monologue striking you today? What is a thought, a comment, a question, an answer, a refutation you would like to offer? 563-999-3581. Fear, not only are you the author of your own fear, also fear has no power over you if you don't do what fear tells you to do. That's the story of the student warrior. How does that relate in your life? What have you learned about acknowledging without acting on your own fear? What have you experienced in terms of the liberation that can come from understanding the source of your own upset and how you are the author of your own upset? You're the author of your joy. You're the author of your sadness. You're the author of your frustration. You are the author of your emotions. And willingness to acknowledge that and explore it is the doorway to liberty, a doorway to a range of options you can't otherwise access. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Good talk. I have a lot of different thoughts about this fear thing, as you might imagine. The little line between doing what fear says to do and feeling fear, I would like to find out more about, because many times I don't think I do what fear seems to be telling me to do. I just feel it. And I use the worksheets and I do the breathing, or walking is like tapping. I read somewhere that just left, right while you're walking. So I often walk around if I can't settle down somewhere. I might, if I'm in a meeting, I might just walk around at the back of a room, for instance. But what does she mean about doing what fear dictates, Pema Chodron?
Well, it isn't that complicated. It's the idea of doing what fear tells you to do. So let's say that I have a phone call to make and I have some anticipatory anxiety that the person's mm-hmm. not going to be happy with me, or they're going to yell at me, or they're going to fire me, or they're going to give me work to do that I don't want to do, so I don't make the phone call. That's listening to what fear tells me to do. let's say that I have an interaction with somebody and I pick up an energy from them that has me supposing I know what's going on with them and I know that they're about to attack me, and so I decide to attack them first. That's doing what fear tells me to do. Do you need other examples?
Yeah. No, that's, I understand that. So I bet a lot of us know not to act on the fear or to push through it. For instance, the phone call, I might just say, oh boy, my fear voice is talking. I'm going to make that call anyway. Everything will be all right. And go ahead and make the call. But very often, fear just shows up as a feeling, a rush, a dark thing. It's even like a mindset or a climate that I live in. I am so in the habit of just being, having fear be the thing before I recognize what I'm doing. And then the tools help, consciousness of it helps, allowing it to be there for a moment because I know it's a false thing, or I hope I know it's a false thing, and there may be a lot of something to look at right in there. Maybe I don't know it's false. I don't think I act on my, maybe I do. I don't think I act on my fear. I just feel it and then have to deal with it one way or another. And it's just habit.
Well, remember the story. The student warrior that is being told by her mentor that she needs to do battle with fear. And she doesn't want to, but she finally agrees. So she approaches fear and bows three times.
Mm-hmm.
And then she asks, may I have permission to do battle with you?
Mm.
So there are several things about this story that I resonate with. One is I respect fear. Fear as an energy in my system provides good information. I want to respect it. I want to pay attention to it. I also want to understand I'm creating it. It's not being created by something outside of me. So may I have permission to do battle with you? Fear is grateful for the respect being shown.
Yeah.
Thank you, fear says. Thank you for respecting me. And then the student warrior asks fear, how can I defeat you? And fear replies, my weapons are that I talk fast and get very close to your face.
Yeah.
Think about it. Isn't that what your anxiety does?
Yes, it does.
Doesn't your anxiety bring thoughts at you rapid fire and feel like it's right in your face? Then fear said, then you get completely unnerved and you do whatever I say. Those are my weapons. I talk very fast and I get very close to your face. And then you get unnerved and you do what I say. That's more where my power lies, says fear. If you don't do what I tell you, I have no power. Here's the acknowledgement from fear that it only has the power I give it. How do I give it power? By doing what it tells me to. Fear goes on to say, you can listen to me and have respect for me. You can even be convinced by me, but if you don't do what I say, I have no power. So if you think about this, when you think about one of those things we've talked about a lot of times, and your son would be in an airplane and you're revving up your anxiety, worrying about him and constantly, and believing that your anxiety is a force that's keeping him safe. Well, as you rev up your worry, as you let yourself sit there and wallow in the worry, you are doing what fear tells you to do.
Yeah, that's true. I hope I don't do that anymore. So, yeah, I was talking about just having it show up and having it be kind of a climate in which I sit until I turn away from it, breathe through it, go about my business, but it has residual somethings. It's like climate.
But instead of just turning away from it, this is not what – this story does not recommend that you turn away from your fear. This story recommends you get intimate with your – you ask to be shown. You uncover how you're creating this energy within yourself. You're exploring, what are you making this situation mean? And in the intimacy with the fear, I have a new level of understanding, and it loses its power to influence me.
Yeah. I guess I need to ask the question a different way. I was working with Mira yesterday, and man, that woman has COVID, and she had a fever of 102, and we were Zooming. She was Zooming from her bed, and yet she wanted to go ahead and have our session, which just absolutely blew my mind. That's neither here nor there, except that what we were working on was a dream I had a long time ago, and I told you about it, where I felt, for 3 days, I felt complete peace, well-being, incredible well-being, peace, love for everybody and everything. And fear was nowhere to be found. And she said, what's keeping you from knowing the truth of that dream? And I still can't answer that. Because I think I don't believe the dream. I think it was wonderful, but it was like a blip. It was like what people say who have had near-death experiences, or they have died and had an experience, and others will say, oh, that's just what the cells in the brain do when they are about to blink out. It's like a candle that burns much more brightly before it goes out. Now, I grab those ideas. They make sense to me. They keep me from being unmoored, or they keep me from being uprooted. And yet, what are those roots? Those roots are in darkness, negativity. Anyway, I've been sitting on that question. She says, you know it's true. And I said, no, I don't know it's true. And she said, yes, but you do know it's true. Let yourself know the truth of that dream. And I'm not doing it. So that's a weird, rough comparison.
Okay.
To you.
All yeah. right. But now what's coming up for me is, in listening to you say that, is what we were doing with Ellen a while back. Not very long ago.
Okay.
Talking about what beliefs she holds about what will happen if she lets herself do the work. What would the work, well, for her, it was, you know, we were in the process of talking about a specific targeted journaling mind shifter tool. Well, for you, it's very much the same thing right now. The work for you is accepting this truth that was in your dream and that many deep spiritual teachings hold as a foundational piece. You're completely whole and complete just the way you are. Nothing of value can be taken from you or added unto you. This is a safe, loving, benevolent world, etc. That's the same message that you are saying you're not sure is true. Yet most deep spiritual teachings hold that as a foundational truth. So what might you need to do to uncover why you don't want to accept that truth, or why you don't want to allow yourself to explore? And rather than forcing yourself to explore it, this is the same kind of thing that we were doing the last time you were talking about working with her mirror, was instead of pushing past the resistance, explore the resistance. Well, what is it that I'm convinced would happen if I let myself live in the belief, in the knowing, in the experience of my complete and total safety? Why am I creating a
three
vision?
Different things. Belief and knowing are different for me. So I could say I believe, but I'd be lying, I guess, because I don't know. Okay. Sorry. Those three words don't go together in my mind.
Okay.
I forget the other one.
Well, okay. They don't have to, but there's a part of you that will not let yourself live in the realization of something you know or something you believe. Whichever one you can't get to yet, you've got one. You've got the knowing but not the believing, or you've got the believing but not the knowing. Whichever one, something's blocking you from just this whole body acceptance of this truth. That you like to believe, that a lot of deep spiritual traditions promote, that, you know, you had a dream telling you it's true. So something's blocking you from accepting it at a deeper level. And so we're just suggesting do the work to uncover what's the horrible or unspeakable or not willing to be tolerated connection you have that says it's not okay for you to just relax into that knowing. What are you afraid would happen if you lived from that knowing or from that belief, et cetera? And you're not going to get to that in this call. You're going to need to do the mind shifter or the meditation or the EFT tapping with worksheets. There's a part of your mind that says, it's not okay, it's not safe for me, it's not safe for others, for me to know this is true, to believe it is true, to live from the realization of this truth. There's a part of your mind that says, you need to live in fear. And there's another definition for doing what fear tells you to do, and that is just living in the fear.
Okay, good connection.
Without exploring it, without understanding, wait a minute, how am I actually the author of this energy and experience in my life in this moment? Right. If I say, well, I'm afraid because this, that, or the other thing, I'm refusing to do the work of understanding how I'm creating the energy of fear. I'm attributing it to someone or something outside of myself, and then I'm no longer questioning how I'm the one creating that energy, how the actual mechanism of me pouring my mind energy into a specific pattern of thoughts is the thing that's creating my energy of fear in that moment, not the outside event. And as soon as I attribute it to an outside event, I'm not looking at how I'm doing it.
Yep. How many times do you have to say that? That's what I was going to ask, is you say this and you say this and you say this and you've got to say it because I am not trust that maybe other people aren't getting it either. I totally understand about nothing outside me can cause my upset, and yet I'm still doing it. So thank you. I mean, you've just, bore down.
and that's another way to answer the question, what does it mean to do what fear tells me to do? Fear is going to tell me to attribute my experience of fear to people and things outside of me. That's another way to look at that. Every time I attribute my fear, my anger, my hurt, my sadness to someone or something outside of me, I'm doing what fear tells me to do. Fear doesn't want me to see the fear doesn't want me to see the truth of fear. Because if I see the truth of fear and I refuse to do what it tells me, it has no power over me. That's the point of the story.
Really good. Stepping outside that would be like stepping, like being a fish and coming out on land and realizing that air, that I can metabolize air. That's how drastic this change of mindset feels.
Yes, it absolutely is. It is that radical. And that's why, because it is so radical and so fundamental, why your mind wants to keep wrestling with it and saying, well, but wait a minute, how am I doing what fear tells me? And I'm not doing what fear tells me. And I'll rationalize dozens of ways that I'm not doing what fear tells me. And yet every time I attribute fear, my experience of fear to someone or something outside of me, I'm doing exactly what fear tells me to do.
Yeah. So the idea of stepping outside and being new, being like a new person, I can only imagine trying it out, faking it. I can't go there yet, but, and I don't know if
faking it can make it work
in this realm.
Well, but the alternative is, as we're recommending, that you do the journaling work to uncover what your resistance is about, what your belief is about how things are not going to be safe for you or others that you love, or how you're not going to be able to function if you step into the belief or the faith or the knowing. So that's the alternative. That's what we're recommending. We're not necessarily recommending fake it until you make it. We're recommending exploring what are the dynamics that you believe are true that keep you locked in this unproductive pattern.
Well, I know we're getting toward the end of the hour, but it feels to me as if the simple fact that we have physical bodies that are going to be removed at some point is proof that this realm is not safe. It's been great for however many years, but it's not ultimately safe because we are not going to remain here. And
well, that's all right. So
if
all right, but if that's your definition of safety, then redefine safety. Because, you know, all of these spiritual teachings talk about how the dropping of the physical body is not a danger.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah.
That your true self, your core, your essence as love, isn't bound to a specific size or shape or viability of this energy system you're calling your body.
So there again, faith, knowing on another level. Anyway, I know you have to go. Thanks, Dr. Tim.
Okay.
This has been really good.
Well, you're very welcome and deserving. Thank you for the call. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love. And everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. And I was not where I could write. If you would send me what you were saying earlier about
the story of the student warrior and the fear. Yeah, it's from Emma Chodron. Yeah, I'll send it to you in an email.
All right, great. Thank you.
Blessings.
So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, November the 10th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to get dialed in. He's actually out running around, and so it may take him just a minute. I'll invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain.org. And you can click on Start Here or scroll down, click the bullseye. They both take you to where you'll find all the tools that you need. And I'll remind everybody, too, that we are this Saturday, November the 13th, going to be doing the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. And if you scroll a little bit further down to events, you will find the flyer on that. You can join for one session or three sessions or for 12 sessions. And we are going to be doing that every second Saturday of the month. And then the Wednesday following that, we will be doing the processing questions and answers and so forth. And so if you're not signed up already to join us for one of those, please get in touch with Michael or myself. You can email me at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. Or if you've got our phone numbers, you can text us. We'd love to have you participate in that. And if you're already signed up to be part of that and you haven't picked your mind shifter, then we invite you to give us two numbers. First number is from 1 to 3. Second number is from 1 to 13. And actually, even if you're not part of the breathing and you want to do a mind shifter, we invite you to ask for those two numbers and we will give you your mind shifter. Welcome, Michael. And Michael, if you're talking, we cannot hear you.
I'm just simply mute challenged. It's an old game. So welcome, everybody. Absolutely gorgeous. 72, 73 degree day. The sun is bright. There's not one single cloud. Totally blue sky. Not one chemtrail in the sky. It's absolutely awesome. And I just came across a treasure trove of dry leaves that I'm collecting for our garden. So I'm out doing garden errands and delighted to be here to engage in this conversation about forgiveness. Jeannie, I neglected to bring the book with me. And maybe if you wanted to read a couple of paragraphs, if you want to grab it, it's right beside my bed. We could do that. And beyond that, we're honored and delighted that you're here to participate in this conversation. I actually just finished listening to an interview that I did last year with a young Spanish lady who was asked us to be part of a conference, and we did a one-hour interview, and I'm tomorrow at 11:11, tomorrow being November the 11th, 2021, at 11:11, I'm going to do another presentation for that same group. But if you go to my Facebook page, or Jeannie's Facebook page, you'll see an announcement about that, and in it is a link to last year's show. And I'll just say, go listen to it. It is one of the best presentations I've ever done. I mean, I've been listening to it as I've been collecting leaves, but my mind has just been boggled with each idea and how much we got into that tiny thing called 1 hour. So if you're ready to hear a really compact, complete presentation about forgiveness, including the how-to of it, go listen to that. Jump on my Facebook page. And if you're not connected with me on Facebook, my Facebook page name is JM underscore, as in Jeannie and Michael, JM underscore RYCE. JM underscore RYCE. And you'll see that that link to last year's presentation with this group, and tomorrow we're going to do another, and it's going to be live on Facebook. So there's also a link there on my Facebook page. Jean's got it on her page as well. It's on the Why Again page and the Forgiveness Doctor page and the Kavoris Manuscript page. So there's a link there. And if you want to listen to it live tomorrow, it'll actually start. Her opening will be at 11 o'clock. And then I'll begin at 11:11, which is, if you're not familiar with it, the moment at which armistice was signed. And so we're going to spend some time honoring those who've given their lives in the futile pursuit of world peace through war. And, you know, the ego's insane game will do that forever until we wake up to who we are and start to apply forgiveness. And so we'll step into that conversation tomorrow. And in the meantime, Miss Jeannie, do you have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's all quiet here. And I'm assuming where you made the last mark is where you stopped in the book.
That's it. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
All right.
So I'll read a little bit of it. So this, if you're not familiar with it, we've been reading out of the Why Is This Happening to Me Again and What You Can Do About It. Still in the chapter on waking from the has-been, which is the has, H-A-S-B-I-N, has-been, is our past, living out of the past. And so Michael's talking to a character named Richard. And Richard says, explain to me again what, quote, built into brain cells, unquote, means. Information has to be in your structure before your brain can turn it into a reality. Though information may be on a piece of paper, it is not available through your brain as a reality until it is in your brain cell structure. What we see, quote, unquote, and when we see, is the image output from the mind, not what is in the world. Every image seen through the mind is internal to that mind. The physicists tell us that what goes on in the world of actuality is a whirling mass of energy moving in patterned ways. The eye cannot see. It is a frequency device that, as an antenna, tuned to certain frequencies that we call visible light spectrum. It brings those frequencies into the brain. The mind, a function of the brain cells firing, filters everything through its own content. Anything inconsistent with the content will be changed to conform to the internal belief system of the evidential device, the mind. Richard broke the chain of thought. I've noticed I'm not breathing, and I'm surprising myself at how often I don't. What surprises me most is that for as frequently as I hold my breath, I usually don't even know when I'm doing it. For something as basic as breathing, I would think I would be more aware of it when I'm not. He gasped, when I do breathe, Michael, all this information feels like overload. It feels like I can't grasp it. I feel stupid, he acknowledged. Good, I replied. Nice catch. What I hear is that you are noticing for yourself when unconsciousness surfaces, which usually means the has-been is having one of its conflicting realities challenged. Holding your breath tends to lock your awareness into the smallness of the mind of the past. Breathing opens the larger context of actuality and is one of the keys to dumping the has-been's contents when they are inaccurate or no longer useful. Stillpoint breathing is a tool that we teach in our intensives to open and dump the limiting components of the has-been and do it at high speed. Let's look into the, quote, stupid, unquote, thought that has just surfaced. Who taught you you were stupid? I asked. When a reality like this surfaces, if you stay conscious and keep breathing, it is your opportunity to forgive and to remove that reality from the has-been. Richard says, my dad always called me stupid. Are you saying that I took on the reality being stupid, and now as it surfaces, I have the chance to forgive and get rid of that reality in my mind, or to be run by it, which you call going unconscious? As I put this together with the evidential mind stuff that you explained earlier, it occurs to me that if I accept being stupid as my reality, my mind can only give me evidence of that, and I'll be stupid. Is that why being stupid has plagued me all my life? That's the way it works, I confirmed. Well, I'm changing that thought. I'm letting go of that idea now. I've been blocked by the reality of being stupid long enough. It has interfered with everything. It's been terrifying, almost like a dragon has been chasing me. Honest, that's what it feels like. Is this what was meant by the casting out of the demons? Richard asked. That's what it seems like to me. I bet that was the kind of thing they were referring to in the scriptures when they spoke of demons. It was getting free of the things that haunted us from out of the has-been. They were referring to this inner healing process, right? Exactly. Our disintegrative inner thought complexes are our demons, Richard. And I'll stop there.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. And it occurs to me, you know, most times when you get an email or you go to a site and they offer you something free, you got to look through 50 screens of information. You got to say no 20 times to 30 products and blah, 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 blah. When we say it's there free, we mean free. You don't even have to give us your email address. If you want to go to the site and download the book, just go to whyagain.org. It's a picture of the book. Click on it. If you want to get onto our mailing list, down at the bottom of the page, there's a link that says join our mailing list. But there's no, we don't have any requirement. It's truly here. Take this. Put it to work in your life. And I just, if that few paragraphs rattled anything in you, then please read the book. Now, we can't sell you one. Actually, we can sell you a slightly updated version that we did that's an audio recording. We do have that audio recording, and it's available on either a CD or a download that's a permanent download if you buy. So you can do that, but we have no requirement whatsoever that you do that. You can download the book free in English and German and Russian and Spanish and Swedish and Farsi. Well, actually, Swedish isn't free. The publisher there wouldn't let us put it on because they were afraid they were going to lose money. But anyway, it's there, and you just go download it. And again, if you don't want to get on our mailing list, down at the bottom of the homepage, there's a link that says join our mailing list, and they'll keep you posted on what we're doing. And we'll send out valuable information from time to time. We're not going to overload you. We're not going to do, 10 emails a day or anything like that. One, maybe two a month is about the limit. There might be an occasion where we might do one or two more than that, but that's about it. So if you want to get a hold of it, and again, go to the webpage. And again, if that's clicking for you, if that's making sense, then go to my webpage, or pardon me, my Facebook page, JM_RYCE. Send me a friend request if you like. But just take a look at the post, just a recent post where we talk about the workshop tomorrow. And in that is a link. We're suggesting to people before we do tomorrow that they give a listen to that link. And it's a one-hour interview on forgiveness. And it's so jam-packed. It's amazing. So get it. Put it to work in your life. And then, as you do that, a million questions will probably surface. And we are here to answer a million questions. The whole purpose of this show is to present the information, have a dialogue with you where we get to answer those questions for you and for anybody else to support you in whatever's moving in your life. And then that we've got an archive of it so that anybody in the future, and actually we're finding as time goes on that more people are listening to the archives than the show live. That's a growing thing. And so, all of these conversations are there for posterity, for anyone to access at any point in the future. And so put it to work in your life, please. It will change your generations. Literally, you can change your genes. And I don't mean the old dirty ones you're just out digging the garden with. I mean, you can change your genetic structure if you're willing to develop the skill. Now, if you're not willing to develop the skill, if you're not interested in working with it, knowing about it can be helpful, but it's not the answer. It can be a starting point. My observation over the last 50 years of working with people is that it takes 5 to 10 years for people to start to get, and I mean 5 to 10 years of dedicated working with the tools to really get the kind of mind shift that means, now I've got it. And it's on such a depth that, sadly, at this stage at least, most people aren't willing to go. know, when we're traveling, when we're on the road, let's say we're doing a presentation for, you know, 100 people, well, why is this happening to me again? And I'll suggest at the end of that workshop, it's usually I do it on a Sunday morning, and then I'll usually do a week of workshops following that in that same location. So on Sunday morning at the end of the workshop, I'll suggest do at least one worksheet a day, preferably do 5 worksheets a day for the next 40 days. And people are like, and how many are willing to do that? Oh, yeah, yeah, man, boy, I'm going to do it. And along about Wednesday, you know, I'll do a Monday night workshop, then Tuesday, about Wednesday night, I'll say, and how many people did their 5 worksheets today? Out of 100, I'll be really delighted if people put their hands up. And I'll say, how many did 4 worksheets? No hands go up. 3 worksheets, maybe one more hand goes up. 2 worksheets, 2 hands go up. 1 worksheet, 3 more hands go up. I consider that a really successful presentation. Because, and get what we're really inviting you to do, and when you understand this, it makes it a whole lot easier. We're inviting you to look into a Pandora's box. You know, the Greeks told us, don't ever open Pandora's box. But here's what they didn't tell you. If you ever never open Pandora's box, which is your own unconscious, then your whole life looks like Pandora's box, the content. You remember Yeshua said 2,000 years ago, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. The heart is the unconscious. The heart is Pandora's box. You better open it, or your body and your life will be a shambles if, you know, this is an if your generation's life were shambles. Now, if you have generations that went through life with no conflict and no strife and no loss and no death, that means everybody in your bloodline is still alive, then don't worry about it. Don't do it because you've got no work to do. But if that's not true, then you've got work to do, just like all of us. And I'll say that. Share every once in a while to illustrate that point. Back several years ago, I bought a new computer, received it from the company, and plugged it in, and it wouldn't work. So I called the company, and I don't even know how long, hours we spent on the phone with technical support. Well, we apologize, Dr. Rice. Just send it back to us. We'll fix it. So I sent it back, and they returned it to me, fixed, supposedly. It had exactly the same problem. If I remember correctly, I did that twice, sent it back to them. And I have a friend, actually Michael J., my son, is a computer nerd. And when he was about 14, he decided what he wanted to do was learn computers. And a friend, a student of mine in Kansas City, Graham Gibson, bless his heart, he's passed out of his body, had a computer school. So I arranged for Michael to go up there. And Michael J., you know, being brought up at Heartland, where we've got 15 buildings and 17 acres, knew how to do everything. You know, if it needed to be fixed, Michael J. knew how to do it. It was just, you know, we had a fix-it man. Thank you, Fran Tyner, for your support all those years ago. And Michael J. became his shadow, and he learned how to do so much stuff. So Michael J. did an exchange with Graham for a room and board while he went to school. And Graham ran about 4 or 5 different businesses. I mean, he was like the proverbial chicken with his head cut off, was always on go. And I hesitated to call him, but after 2 rounds of sending it back and 2 rounds or 3 rounds of technical support, I finally called Graham. I said, Graham, I don't know what to do. I've got a computer, and it just, here's what it's doing. He said, well, okay, so turn it on and go to a C prompt and type in this string of commands. I said, okay. So I type it in. Actually, I had to ask him what a C prompt was at that point. And I typed it in, and he says, read back to me after you hit a return what it says. So I read it back to him. He said, okay, type in this string of commands. Tell me what it says when you hit a return. I read what it said. He said, okay, type this in. It's fixed. I was like, wait a minute, Graham, you don't really mean that. I mean, you're kidding, right? No, Michael, your computer is fixed. And this is a guy who's a former NASA computer scientist. The computer was fixed. And the company that made it, hours of technical support, back in their hands, they couldn't make it work. So now, what's the difference between one and the other? It's a skill level. It's how much time have you practiced with it? You know, I bet you right now, right this minute, if I had Tiger Woods' phone number I could call him, and I would bet dollars to donuts that Tiger Woods is on the golf course right now hitting golf balls. Through the driving, pitting, bunting, putting, chipping, or whatever. Now, why is he on the golf course? Is he on the golf course because he's a pro, or is he a pro because he's on the golf course? If somebody wants to really use these tools, put these tools to work, it's going to have to become a dedicated project. Now, you say, oh, my life, why is this happening to me again? Why are they doing this to me again? I've gone from relationship to relationship, marriage to marriage, job to job, employer to employer, employee to employee, and that's why is this happening to me again? Well, you'll notice if you've got a why is this happening to me again question, which virtually everyone does, and I don't care if it's the guy who's making $20 million at the top of the top corporation or it's the guy in the pit. There's a reason. We are creators. Now, everybody loves the idea of being a creator when the creation's going well. But when the creation's not going so well, it's always everybody else's fault. Notice how many times you said, you make me so mad, you hurt me so much, you peeve me so deeply. But you'll notice if you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the only one that was there every time. Way back 2,000 years ago, and you know, notice we've got a whole theology in the world that says, well, there's nothing you can do. You know who did that? Go back and read the passage where the disciples are there with Yeshua. They say to him, in essence, their question is, what do we do to please the Creator? How do we keep God happy? You know, it's kind of their question, as though that was our job. And he gives them an answer. Half of his disciples at that moment got up, mouthed the words, according to the scriptures, too hard a saying, and left. They're the people, the ones who left, that weren't willing to do the work are the ones who made up this easy theology of Jesus saves and he's going to fix your life for you. All you have to do is say some magic words. After all, there's nothing you can do anyway. You're just a hopeless sinner. Well, what kind of craziness is that? It's a craziness devoid of truth. It's a darkness steeped in darkness, looking for the light and making up stories so it can pretend that it doesn't have to actually live up to functioning as love, that it can take it one group of people or another and condemn them and rage at them and send them to hell. In the name of a man who said, your job is singular. Your job is to be the space of conscious, active, present love for your neighbor. And neighbor in Aramaic means anybody that you think about. But no, don't make me accountable for that. Let me just have this easy theology where somebody else is going to fix it, and I'll just keep brainwashing these people into believing there's nothing they can do. It's one of the biggest frauds that's ever come to the planet. That's why we have no theology here. We've got a set of tools. Here, put them to work. We'll speak to you about where the tools were sourced, what they mean, how to use them, and support you in making the breakthroughs you need to make breakthrough in your mind in order to make them useful. But in the last analysis, you know, Mahatma Gandhi had a powerful saying. He said, if you want potatoes, you've got to use the hoe. And he said that we must, in order to have a peaceful world, expose injustice. Sometimes people look at my Facebook page and say, Michael, why do you post that stuff? I thought your life was about forgiveness. Expose injustice. And the first injustice you need to expose is the one happening in your own mind, that you're doing to yourself, first and foremost. If you are not the space of conscious, active, present love for yourself, you have violated the first law, and nothing else you do matters. So you get that one on track. And as you take the tools, it will be easier and easier to put life on track as a human being. So that's what we're here to support and accomplish in the world. And we're honored and delighted that you're part of the process. So rather than the half of the disciples that left and never came back, said too hard a thing, don't make me deal with what's going on inside of me. Let me keep pretending it's all everybody else's fault. We're from the half who said, okay, show us what we need to do. And the number one thing he said you needed to do was to function as love and then forgive. Everything in you that is less than love has to be removed. And forgiveness is removal. Forgiveness is nothing to do with letting somebody else off the hook. And Jeannie, I don't think I sent you the new Mind Shifters, did I? The Section 4 Mind Shifters?
No, you did not.
Ah, so if anybody called and wanted one, they're actually in my computer, so you don't actually have them. So we can't really give them to people today. I don't have them either. But we'll have them tomorrow.
But we can give them the 1 to 3.
1 to 3, yeah. Yeah, pick a number from 1 to 3 and then a number, second one, that pops into your head from 1 to 13. And call in. Let's give you a mind shifter. And a mind shifter is a thought. Here's the definition of it. It's a thought about an issue in your life around which you have negative thoughts, and it's the opportunity to process, surface, and release the negative thoughts. So the opportunity to throw out the disintegrative creative process that if you're engaging in it, you don't need to be engaging in it anymore. And our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. It's kind of fun, Jeannie, that the reading from Why Is This Happening to Me Again was about the still point breathing process today. That's a workshop that we're doing this weekend. If somebody's ready for one of the most profound tools you will ever experience, this weekend we're doing mind shifters and still point breathing. It'll start Saturday morning. Actually, if you choose to participate, we'll send you an email with two videos and an audio to listen to, get you working on and writing a mind shifter Saturday morning, and then at 10 o'clock Eastern time, we'll step into the still point breathing process. We've got a small group at this point, so I'd imagine by the time we get finished processing with that group, we'll probably be finished by one or maybe two. And then on Wednesday evening, there's a follow-up session, a second session that goes hand-in-hand with the mind shifters and still point breathing, and that'll be from 7 till 9 o'clock on Wednesday night. And we'll clean up questions and do process, you know, whatever process needs to happen out of Saturday's workshop. So if you're interested in participating in that, drop Jeannie an email. Her email is jeannie@whyagain.org. Or if you're on my Facebook page, you can message me or message Jeannie. And make sure you leave your name and your phone number in the email, and I'll get back to you and get you registered if you want to come and play. So that's what we'll be doing Saturday morning. And if you participate Friday night and or Saturday morning, we'll invite you to be writing your mind shifter and getting ready for still point breathing. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet.
All
but
quiet,
we just had a hand go up.
Oh,
we just
good.
Had a hand go up. Area code 904, you're on the air. Is this Dusty?
Yes, it is. Hi, can you hear me okay?
You're loud and clear, sir. Welcome.
Oh, great. Yes. Aloha, you two and everybody listening. I appreciate this program a lot.
Aloha.
Yeah, and what Jeannie opened up with, it reminded me of a question I wanted to ask you yesterday, but at the end of your program, but it was too late. And it had to do with, I can't remember the words you used, but they were good. It was in passing that things aren't outside your mind and your brain. They're inside, and something like that. And I saw something the day before on TV, and I don't know if I can't really, I think it was a little grandiose, but they said there were more connections in the brain than there were particles in the universe. And I go, oh, yeah, I'd like to meet the guy that counted all those. And but nonetheless, you've made some reference to something inside and all those connections. And I wonder if you could speak to that in any how-tos along the way.
Well, I certainly, you know, have never sat down and run my finger over them to count them. But I actually several years ago did work with an ophthalmologist in Florida. And he had developed a method, and unfortunately he's passed now, but he developed a method for pointing light into the pupil and stimulating parts of the brain from the pupil. And that was exactly his take as an ophthalmologist, and I don't know where he got the science on it, but that's literally what he would say, is there are more connections possible in one human brain than there are molecules in the known universe.
Oh,
that's a lot of molecules. You think about the number of grains of sand on a beach, and they're not molecules. They're just huge, monstrous grains of sand compared to a molecule. I don't know how many molecules are in a grain of sand, probably a couple hundred billion. But, yeah, it's and the other thing you would say, 80% of them are visual. That's why when you do meditation, that's why when we do still point, we ask people to close their eyes, because the brain will just keep going and going and going. That's one of the reasons when we do still point breathing, we invite people to breathe through the mouth, because when you breathe through the nose, it oxygenates, puts oxygen right up into the brain and keeps the brain active. We want that sucker to shut up. We want it to get quiet so we can get into something other than perception and constructs of the mind.
Right.
But 80% of them.
Okay.
So, you know, if you want to move inside and you want to get rid of the distraction, one of the first things you need to do is close your eyes, because that just through resonance, information just keeps popping, because so many of those connections are tied to the visual receptor.
Okay. I mean, it's staggering to think that there's that many potential connections in the brain, and, you know, my golly, we ought to all be just teachers. And I know that it takes work, but I wonder if you have any thoughts on how, other than what you just said, on how to, any connections, any, you know, ideas along that line.
Well, if you talk to a modern-day psychologist, they'll tell you that 90 to 95% of the thoughts, the mental action that goes on in your brain and your body are unconscious. And my offering is that it's unnatural for a human being to have an unconscious. And, you know, it's like we've shut off. If 90% of what's going on is unconscious, then we've shut off 90% of the capacity of what should be conscious awareness. And we've shut that down because it's become an habituated pattern that's been brainwashed into us by the generations. And how do you shut it down the most efficiently? You blame somebody else for the products it's producing, for your perception. You made me mad, you made me sad, you made me afraid, you hurt me, that upset me, they disturbed me. That's all dissociative language. All of that means that when I use that language about anything, whatever's related to that in my mind, I'm literally putting it beneath this veil of the temple, this barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious. You go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and he said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain. And he wasn't talking about a purple curtain in a church. He was talking about the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious. And when we do that, we get to be restored to our full power. Otherwise, we're hobbling around with, you know, maybe 2%, maybe 3%, perhaps 5%. The odd average genius, maybe 10%, but the rest of it's shut down. And it's a generational pattern that needs to be overcome. You go back, and it is that shutting down is the cause of death, because what we shut down are the things we don't want to deal with, the things that are disintegrative energy. And so wherever we store that in the structure, we create disintegrative processes in that part of the mind, which means it might be your big toe or your kneecap or your lung or your liver or your heart, whatever it is. And so we want to reopen that. We want to open that veil and overcome that tendency. And if you go to Revelations, there's a pretty monstrous promise, just gigantic promise. It says, to he that overcomes, he will not taste of the second death. We'll stop killing ourselves. He will become, what he says, is a pillar in the temple, which is, you know, again, not a church, but your body, and shall go out no more. We're going to stop killing ourselves. Literally, my offering is all death is suicide. And suicide is programmed into virtually everyone's mind on the planet. How do I know that? Because everybody in your and my bloodline over 120 is already dead.
Yeah.
It's programmed right into us. So are we willing to overcome that? Are we willing to face, you know, why did the first person who was living as pure, conscious, active, present love, why did the first person say, no, I don't want to do this. Oh, it's all Bill's fault. How long ago was that in your bloodline or mine? And how many people have followed suit? How many bought into the training and the habit and the pattern until we now are, you know, at the point again where, according to psychologists, 90%+ of the mind is shut down. It's a huge ship moving in the ocean in a particular direction, and its primary attribute is inertia. It's a big thing to turn around and change.
Right.
But it can be done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, once in a while in my life, I've been given the gift where that veil just got rent for a little bit, and I got to get a peek of the bespoke, whatever I could perceive. The
pretty profound, the, isn't it?
And I go, oh, my goodness. At one level, I'm about as important as a pencil on a NASA ass in a faraway universe. And in another way, it's like I'm still all a part of everything. And what did he say? Along the lines of what you just mentioned, he said, youth has no age. And but it takes work, doesn't it? I mean, you really have to focus and go after it.
Yeah, if we're going to overcome the inertia of the device, there's work to be done. And, you know, in terms of when those openings happen, you know, Paul talked about that. He had that happen. He said, whether in the body or not, I knew not, for I saw things which I could not utter. In other words, there were no words for this one. And
yeah,
and actually, when that veil opens and people start to see that, some people go crazy. You know, they end up in asylums. Because nobody can relate to it, and everybody thinks they're crazy. And they're not. They're starting to touch into actuality. I remember working with a woman back about, 30 years ago. And she had gone to a psychiatrist, had been going to a psychiatrist, and he was getting ready to put her into an asylum for long-term, quote-unquote, care. And her family said, you need a second opinion. And a physician that she knew had worked with me and sent her to me to talk to me. And we sat down, had a conversation. And what we uncovered, you know, she was at the point where she had divorced her husband. She was non-communicative with him and with anybody in the family. And she could not work. She could not hold down a job. So her life was in pretty rough shape. And the thing that turned her life around is in a still point breathing session, we'd done some forgiveness work, and then a still point session, and the last memory she had of her mother was when she was a small child, her mother was being put in an asylum, and her mother never came out. And she was getting ready to follow that exact pattern. Within about 3 weeks of that session, she was back to work, back in relationship with her family, and getting onto good terms with her husband at that point.
Oh, that's amazing, beautiful. In fact, that's a huge jump.
Huge, yeah, jump. Yeah, it's mega, mega. And, you know, every limitation can be faced and forgiven when the energy patterns are removed. And whatever's at the root of it, you know, in this case for this woman, the thing that kept her in so much trauma was being a young child, losing her mother, and going into asylum. Here she is ready to go into the asylum. And when she was able to bring that memory forward in the presence of love and just be with it, that was the end of, you know, any need for her to have anything to do with asylums, of her acting crazy like her mother did.
Oh, okay. So in that sense, love was sort of the answer anyway. Is that it or what?
Well, you know, if I go back about 30 years ago, and I've been working with people for about 20 years at that point, and watched some pretty awesome healings happen, some pretty amazing things, and other people who didn't, you know, move an inch. And so it was a puzzling question. What is it? What's at the root of the magnificent healing that occurs? And it could be physical, mental, emotional, financial, relationship, you know, things that couldn't possibly be healed all of a sudden turn around in an instant. And what's at the root of that? What became clear to me was that two things had to occur. Whatever the energetic pattern was that was creating the trauma had to surface. And at the same time, conscious, active, present love had to be there. When those two met, there was a transmutation of the lower energy, and that was the healing, whatever the energy was about. And when I talk about conscious, active, present love, I'm not talking about the sappy, I love you stuff of this culture. Nothing to do with anything that relates to anything with loving anybody. That's all, you know, a whole made-up fantasy. But where one really was experiencing themselves as their created essence, that self was conscious, active, and present in the space. It is a powerful field, and that field transforms anything lower that it touches. And of course, you know, if somebody isn't able, you know, things too traumatic, I can't handle this one, you can become the facilitator for me. You can, if you can hold to conscious, active, present love, then you support my healing.
All right.
And, you know, one of the things,
I'm glad you put it like that, because maybe the time when I feel that everything's okay, and if I'm not in that in some way, I feel lost.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, you'll hear Dr. Tim when he talks about this work, and, you know, he's a clinical psychologist, been in practice for 4 decades or so. And he's talked before about how, you know, they hear about this therapist that just does this magnificent work. So they go to his workshop, and the therapist teaches him the technique, and it doesn't work. You know, hundreds of therapists going, you know, the occasional therapist can make it work. It's like, what, you know, I thought it was the technique. No, it wasn't the technique. It was that love has to be conscious, active, and present. And what Dr. Tim has offered is he can take this tool of forgiveness and hand it to anybody. And if they'll use it, they'll produce the result. Where he'd go and study, you know, he'd maybe do a weekend or 6 weekends in a row with this great therapist, but he couldn't produce the result using that therapist technique. And, you know, my take would be it was the active, present love of the therapist that created the healing. And you can't teach that to somebody. You can give them tools, and if they practice, they'll become that, because it's our true nature. It's what we're created out of and created to be. And the tool of forgiveness, if people will follow that worksheet, they will develop the skill of, they'll uncover themselves as conscious, active, present love, and develop the skill to process themselves. And we define processing as the ability to keep love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up.
Boy, the first law. There we are. You got me on that one.
That's the bottom line of all of it.
Yeah, and thank you very much.
Honored and delighted.
All right.
Anything else on your mind today, sir?
Well, Well, I've got a friend from out of town that I've known since before I met you way back when, and he and I have been in contact with you. We play music. And you can hook him a little later. But as far as what's going on, yeah, just that. I've been really focusing on how to stay present. And I because I broke my leg very badly when I was 19, it finally caught up to me about 4 or 5 years ago. And my left my lumbar is a little has to be. And if I walk consciously from one end of the house to the other, any kind of movement, as long as I'm conscious, I do the whole aikido thing, everything's great. But if I go unconscious, I get mad at myself because I'll find myself stomping from one end of the room to the other to get something I forgot or something. I will hurt that. And only by staying conscious within myself does anything work well.
My offering would be, no, I don't believe that you hurt that. My offering would be that you're experiencing what anger does to your tissue structure. You're experiencing the assault you're doing to yourself by allowing anger to move in your structure. And wherever the weak points are in the structure, that's where the assault of anger will tend to show up in someone's structure. So one person, it's back pain, another person, it's, you know, headaches, another person, it's gut disturbance, whatever.
Right. I hear what you're saying.
So forgive your anger. You know, when anger comes up, that's the time for a worksheet, and literally remove the capacity for anger from your structure, and whatever that dis-ease energy is doing to your structure, it will heal. It will change the vibratory energy in the tissue and bring about healing.
Okay. I really never looked at it as anger, more as a I'm disappointed at myself, but that nonetheless, that's a real good point, and I'm going to incorporate that.
Well, let me share what my clue was.
Okay.
When you said I stomp, that's not disappointing.
Yeah, I mean,
stomp is pretty from one end of the house to the other were your words. It's a little more than just disappointment. It's
right. And it's
and
not,
mine, I don't want to look at that stuff, so.
And I know I use the word stomp, and that just means I sometimes overuse a word, but I suppose in a way it was a stomp, but it was. And I appreciate that. It's just that I didn't move to my capacity, I guess is the best way to say it. But yes, I hear what you're saying, and that's
And when you violate a goal that you hold for yourself in your file on violating a goal that you hold for yourself is self-punishment through anger. And when you remove that content, then you'll stop punishing yourself when you don't live up to your own goals for yourself. And we can do forgiveness on ourselves or any object of attention.
Well, then I better get to work on myself because I've got some lofty goals, you know.
Well, then, and the key is when you load a goal in your mind, and your mind serves up some form of hostility or fear, the reason is because that goal has resonated the unconscious hostility or fear. And so if hostility or fear becomes part of the construct of your mind, the goal is the driver for what's going to be used. Your goal selects which data is going to be used to build your perceptual construct. And if your perceptual construct contains some form of hostility or fear, then the goal recruited. You know, it's just like the football recruiter. He goes to the high school and he watches the kids play and he recruits the ones that fit for what he wants to accomplish. Our goals do exactly the same thing. Through resonance, I frame a goal, I set a goal, once I make a commitment to it, if that goal isn't being achieved, then I've got data stored in the file, so to speak, around that particular issue, And the goal recruits that into action and activity. By canceling the goal, that action or activity collapses, and it collapses in on itself, and that's when we get access to the root energy that needs to be worked through. You know, that when I was talking about the woman who, you know, her last memory of her mother was being a small child and watching her, she described, she's standing in front of the asylum and her mother's up there and her father's got her and her mother's up there looking out the window and they're leaving her there for life. She never came out of that asylum. Mm-hmm. And when she was able to cancel the goal for mom to be there, collapse that, and all of a sudden she's right back to being whatever, I don't remember what age she was, 4, 5, 6, and losing her mother. And out of what she had learned from, had been modeled by mom, she was playing the same stuff out in her life and stopped that fast when she applied forgiveness.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Ruminate on that more, because I was over twice my dad was when he died, and I'm older than my mother was, and well over twice the age of my father. So fortunate there.
So I have an invitation.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than ruminate on it, put the pen to the paper on the worksheet.
Oh yeah. Okay. Good idea.
Yeah. That's what we'll move.
Mahalo. It. Okay. I get it. Mahalo, my friend.
Mahalo.
Yes.
All right.
And thank you for reading that, Gene. See you later.
Absolutely. Uh-huh.
All right, my friend. You have a blessed one. Not the love.
Okay. We're
okay,
down
so
to
we're
7
down
minutes.
To 7 minutes. Well, we've got time for another good conversation. Who's out there that we can support? What's on your mind?
Press one.
Our call-in number, 563-999-3581. And, you know, if this work is supporting you and making sense to you and shifting and changing your life, then empower us to take it to deeper and deeper and wider circles of people by going to our website. On the bottom, there's a donate button. And, you know, whatever from your financial circumstances looks like support. If appropriate, you know, drop us some support. You know, you'll notice we don't have commercials in this radio show. We pay to do the show. We don't get paid. We don't have sponsors. We could go out and get sponsors, but it's not what we're about. We're about making the tools available. So if it's supporting you, and we invite you to support us too, you know, a monthly or a one-time or, you know, 50 cents or $500,000. I don't care what it is. But about the only limit. At this point, if somebody had handed us $500,000, we could take several projects forward and be through that $500,000, strictly expanding the work within a year. And so aside from a fairly simple and inexpensive lifestyle, everything that comes into this work goes into how do we make it available to wider and wider circles of people. So if you're out there in listener land, our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. Dial that number. You'll be listening to the show. Push one.
And
we'll have a conversation.
The switchboard just flickered, and I'm not sure that she hit one again, but Susan, I'm going to turn your mic on. Did you press one again?
I didn't, but hello, everybody.
Hi.
Well, hi there, young lady. We haven't heard your voice in a while.
I know.
How's number one grandson doing? How's Jacob?
Jacob, he is at a facility in California. He's now graduated from phase one, which is a very intense inpatient thing where they work on addiction and mental health issues. And I think I had told you about that. And they have him on probably 5 different psychotropic medications. he feels and believes that he needs medications to be okay, which
right.
His father is that way too. His father takes a pill for just about everything. So
children learn what they live.
Yeah, he's gone to the second phase, which is a halfway house about 15 minutes away, and he's liking it. And they're doing two groups a day. He sees a psychiatrist once a week, a counselor twice a week. They go on little trips to the shore or
nice.
To Barnes & Noble or whatever. He's sounding like himself, and we are now, once again, his designated third step down. He will come back to us, and we need to, maybe we can get him on the radio show at that point. I had talked to you about that before. I'm not sure,
sure.
about that. They have a lot of suggestions about what he should be doing
right.
when he gets here. And so I don't have anything to say more about him, but I've been doing my own work because I've had very serious bad knots in my back. And I know it's because even though I'm doing the work mentally and emotionally and then pretty well, something's happening below my consciousness and it's going into my muscles. So I had an x-ray and all is okay in there, you know, some osteoporosis, but I'm old enough to legitimately have that. The guy said, what's been happening in your life? He looked at the x-ray, said, the x-ray looks good, so what's happening to you? And I said,
what are you doing to yourself?
Yes, well, anyway, so, you know, it's a matter of just letting Jacob do his journey and not feeling afraid on any level. And this is a huge assignment, but it's a good one.
So what you're really wanting to do is to be afraid on every level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that what I just heard you say? You wanted to be afraid?
I think that's what I'm, yeah, I think that's what I'm doing down below. Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to say that, mm-hmm. but I can see how you extrapolated that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
My words fly up. My thoughts remain below. So there you go. There's your clue. So now I know that what's moving in that tissue that's showing up as knots is knots of fear. So now I want to breathe
mm-hmm.
into them, soften them, let them open and let them go.
Mm-hmm.
And I
yeah.
have a plan to get an email to you this afternoon with the Mind Shifters, the fourth section of Mind Shifters. So I'll get that to you, and we're breathing at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. So hopefully you
well,
and Tim will be able to be there.
Thanks for the invitation. We could. I've even composed a text to you with my numbers already. I'll send it
oh,
to
cool.
Jeannie right now.
Yeah, send it to Jeannie right now. Did you go from
okay.
1 to 3 or 1 to 4?
I went from 1 to 3 and then 1 to 13.
Okay.
But my numbers are
okay,
2
perfect.
And 12.
2, 12.
Yeah.
Do you have that list in front of you, Jeannie? We're down to about 60 seconds.
No, but I'll send it to her.
Cool.
Oh, great. Thank
cool.
you.
All right, everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's a delight to say hello to everyone and have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world and blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.